You are listening to a sermon by John Friesen, recorded on Sunday, April 1st, 2012, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
This morning, we enter into the Passion Week. And so it is a rather significant entry that we are making. The events of the Passion Week form a rich tapestry of Christian thought and imagination. In my reflections this morning, I wish to focus on a central theme of this week, namely, carrying away the sins of the world. The questions I would like to respond to include, what are the mechanisms involved in the redemptive work of Jesus? How did Jesus carry out the prophetic vision of John the Baptist? Behold, the Lamb of God, which takes away the sins of the world. How does the atonement of Jesus work? An important song which laid the foundation of my life when I was perhaps 12 or 13 is the following. It is a song I actually woke up to several mornings ago after a restful night. This is the song. At the cross, where I first saw the light, and the burdens of my heart rolled away. It was there by faith I received my sight, and now I'm happy all the day. You probably resonate as well with this song because it was thoroughly part of our life many years ago. Let me start by telling a short story about myself. When I was going through my midlife crisis, which was a few years ago, when we reach that particular age, we have one more opportunity to rethink the direction of our life. I considered changing my field of specialization at the university. I had, for some 15 or more years, worked in the specialization of marriage and family counseling. And I thought, what about the next 15 or so years? Where should I turn my interests and my energy? And I thought, well, perhaps counseling the elderly would be the way to go. I knew that according to demographic studies, work with the elderly would become very significant in the future. And at the university, almost no energy was paid to this particular area of work. Youth, yes, but not the elderly. Slowly that is changing on the campus. However, before embarking on this particular field of interest, I needed some experience to see if I would actually enjoy this kind of work. So the medical clinic from whom I received my clients had no difficulty making the necessary referrals. I met with these elderly clients and listened rather intently to their stories. Their lengthy stories always included the expression of feelings of guilt and regret regarding their moral failures. Their life contained secrets that they had not shared with people, except with me at this particular time. The secret involved such things as marital infidelity, maltreatment of their clients or business partners, cheating on examinations, lying, false representations, taking advantage of the weak and the poverty-stricken, and so on. Those of you who have elderly parents whom you've been helping during their journey to the end of their life probably know what I'm talking about. My clients were all atheists. As they faced their death, they had many unresolved moral and ethical dilemmas. To help them, I needed a methodology which addressed my clients' feelings of guilt and questions of moral failure. Alternatively, I needed to help the clients feel or simply redefine their moral failure as delusional and as a result of their social and cultural entrapment. This I could not do. After much soul searching, I decided that counseling the elderly was not for me. It was difficult and challenging, and I did not possess the necessary religious and psychological theory to guide the process. I gave up my interest in this area of work. As many of you know, in a professional counseling relationship, it is always unethical to parachute into the client's life a different set of values than they already have. One cannot, during the counseling process, introduce the Christian perspective, or for that matter, any other perspective into the life of the client, which is not an outgrowth of that client's value system. The counseling relationship provides a very privileged and sacred relationship with a client in which one cannot impose foreign values. Otherwise, every religious belief and every religious belief system would be imposed on a dying client. The place to introduce the Christian story is in teaching and in preaching, and very strongly in sharing one's life in conversation. One must not do this in my professional counseling. My reflection this morning addresses a Christian perspective on how to resolve moral and ethical failure, how to deal with the problem of guilt and anxiety. This is a central concern of the Passion Week. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 16, God instructed Moses and Aaron to select two goats every year for an offering. One goat was to be used as a sin offering to atone for the sins of the transgressions of the people. Once killed, its blood was to be sprinkled on the God's mercy seat on the Ark of the Covenant. There God would view the blood of the sin offering and have mercy on the people and forgive their sins. The high priest would then lay hands on the second goat, which was allowed to live. And he would confess the sins of the people, putting them on the head of the goat. The goat would then bear the blame for all the transgressions of the people and would be set free into the wilderness, where God would remember their sins no more. The goat became known as the scapegoat. This is the old paradigm of the Hebrew people, the old paradigm of atonement. But it is very much related to the way Jesus carried out the salvation story. The atonement contained in Leviticus 16 has many of the elements of the atonement of the New Covenant. Jesus became the scapegoat for the remission of sins. The sentiment is clearly expressed by John the Baptist. Seeing Jesus, John the Baptist proclaimed, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." The Passion Week was a time of conflict, misunderstanding, corruption, injustice, and negative emotion. While Jesus was an advocate of peace and justice and reconciliation, he was not an advocate of the status quo. Jesus was not afraid of conflict, as so many of us are. He challenged people. He conducted himself without fear and anxiety. He did not placate people. Quite the contrary. Jesus called people to a new relationship with God and with each other, and a new way of viewing the world, a new paradigm, if you like, a new understanding of how we are to function in the world. This was why Jesus came into the world, not to smooth over differences, but to usher into existence a new social order, a social order based upon a new vision of human potentiality, of love and care. The old order was passing away, and a new order of social justice, love, grace, and goodwill was being born. This threatened the authority of the religious leaders who were advocates of the status quo. We have already read about the response of the religious leaders to the growing popularity and appeal of Jesus. The Sanhedrin, which was the supreme judicial body of the Jewish state, was terrified of Jesus. The teachings of Jesus, his parables and good works, threatened the practices of the Jewish religion. How is it that Jesus took on the role of the scapegoat? How is it that you sometimes take on the role of a scapegoat? And how does it feel? And perhaps in the discussion period, you can tell us how it feels when you are the scapegoat. We read in John 11, verse 47, "Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, 'What do we do? For this man does many miracles. If we let him alone, all men will believe on him and take away both our place and the nation.'" And then in verse 49, "And then one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said to them, 'You guys know nothing at all.'" Have you ever had somebody say that to you when you're trying to solve a problem? "You know nothing at all." and immediately become somewhat aggressive, and you think he's rather arrogant. But in this case, they all followed Caiaphas. And Caiaphas offered a solution to the problem. Verse 50. Consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not. Furthermore, he argued, the Jews scattered through all the world would respond to this act and return to Jerusalem to become part of the nation. The solution Caiaphas offered was not innovative or creative. This strategy is really very simple and straightforward. Make Jesus the scapegoat. What is scapegoating? Scapegoating goes back to antiquity, where people or animals were sacrificed for the well-being of the rest of society. Scapegoating occurred when an individual or an animal was designated to bear the responsibility for the evil of the society. I have a book here entitled Scapegoating Families. In the last 50 years or so, the whole idea of scapegoating has become a very significant and popular idea in the psychological literature, sociological literature, and in the helping professions. In the Bible, if you think through the issues from a scapegoating perspective, you realize that already in the Garden of Eden, Adam scapegoated Eve, and Eve scapegoated the snake. And then think even of other illustrations of scapegoating, such as Cain and Abel, where Abel was killed by Cain. Or think of the story of Joseph and his brothers, and Joseph was left in the wilderness. These are classical cases of scapegoating, of dumping the issues onto another. And that is a very unique human quality that all of us carry out from time to time. This book illustrates how parents scapegoat their children, how they scapegoat each other, how families scapegoat each other. Scapegoating is endemic in our culture, our politics, and in our interpersonal relationships. Scapegoating occurs in families, in couples, in churches, in conferences, at university, in government, including all institutions in society and the world. Scapegoating is universal and arises in individuals in their efforts to blame others for their own shortcomings. Whenever there is conflict in social relationships or in institutions such as the church, someone is blamed, and the mechanism of scapegoating emerges. Today, when someone refers to a person as a scapegoat, it means he has been made to take the blame for something which is a fault of another. For example, in an extended family, a single individual may be identified as the cause for the family pathology. Even though this family member may protest, He or she is identified as the scapegoat and relegated to live in the wilderness and eventually to die. We call that individual, in many cases, the black sheep. But then Jesus enters our world and preaches something radically different. In Jesus, God takes on the role of the scapegoat. Jesus preached nonviolence, turning the other cheek, and mercy. He said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will see God." Jesus embraces those who have been rejected and scapegoated, the tax collectors, the prostitutes, the women, the lepers, the fishermen, and even the Gentiles. Jesus goes around forgiving people's sins, not because they have sacrificed an animal to a bloodthirsty deity, but because God is able to forgive. He is merciful and accepts the sacrifices of a contrite heart. Why did Jesus become a victim? Why on occasions do you and I become victims? Was it to encourage victimization and call us to be victims? Are we called to be victims? No. It was to put an end to all the scapegoating and victimization. We no longer need to abuse, kill, or sacrifice victims because God has already taken on the role in this fullest form. The cross exposes and reveals our sin of scapegoating and then immediately forgives it. Jesus says the Lamb of God was placed on the cross to take the place of all scapegoats over time. Jesus was a scapegoat for the sins of the world. However, the resurrection released him from the bondage of the scapegoat condition and from being a scapegoat individual, Jesus became the Redeemer. And that is the secret which I think we all need to think about. And there have been a number of books read around that theme, particularly books by René Girard. He has bought our redemption, and in him we are now free. Jesus has overcome violence and death and is now our Redeemer. We as people are all guilty of the sin of scapegoating. Some of us have been the victims of it. The cross exposes all of us. We must exercise the gift of mercy, not of violence. That is the call of the cross. Jesus, the Lamb of God, takes away the sins of the world.